Hello everybody and welcome back to the AntPod. This is now episode 27 and I'm sorry we missed an episode last week. We were all kind of sick and one thing and another and yeah, we just decided to skip it. But that means that this episode is that much better because we haven't talked for an entire week. And yeah, today we are talking about the Manica Rubita challenge because, well, if you haven't followed along the different content creators and different chats around, we are doing, or a lot of people are doing, a Manica Rubita challenge simply because they're quite hard to keep. And yeah, today we have a guest and it's Ant Ramblings. Can you just say hello?
Hello.
How are you doing, man?
Not too bad, not too bad at all. Well, a lot better than I was last week. I'm probably still positive for COVID, but I'm better. So it's an improvement. Yeah. This time last week, when we could have been doing this, no chance. I couldn't be talking like this, to be honest.
No, and this, as we did it, Jake was also feeling a little bit, and Lynn said on the day that she's losing her voice, and I'm like, yeah, let's just not.
Because yeah. All the signs were there. But yeah. It wasn't going to happen.
But yeah, you are, of course, you and Jake are the guys behind the Manica Rubita challenge. And before we go into that, can you explain a little bit about who are you, Ant Ramblings? Who are you?
Well, I'm Paul, and my channel name is Ant Ramblings, just because I ramble about ants. That's about it, really. You know, I'm not worried about being copyright claims and all that business, so I like to just play whatever music I feel like playing. I don't think I'll ever get monetized, or if I did, you know, I'll worry about it when I do, you know. And if I did, I would give the money to the people who want it, you know, copyright claim, so it doesn't bother me anyway. But so I started making videos because I ran out of hard drive space on my phone and my computer, basically. And I thought, I need to, you know, I had no one to talk to about ants, basically, so I thought, well, I'll sort of talk to myself and video it. And so that's what I was doing, and putting them up and thinking, I don't care if anyone watches them or not, because obviously I watch other people's videos, and that's part of what got me into it. But I just thought to myself, I really don't mind if nobody watches this at all. This is a record for me for the future, you know. So that's what I did. So I was using YouTube as a hard drive, basically, and playing music that I would like to listen to. So it's sort of like a record of the music I was listening to back then as well, you know.
That's such a lovely story.
That's about it, really. It's not changed all that much.
No, that's such a simple story. I started a little bit for the same reason, but I always had, like, I just wanted to make better and better videos, and that became my deathly spiral. But I always, that's why I do the a little bit the same style videos on my extra channel. Just, it's just relaxing to just keep a journey and showing the ants and documenting how they're doing. But yeah, how long have you been keeping ants for then?
I was thinking about that about an hour ago. I think it was 2020, in the autumn of 2020, I think.
All right.
And I think, I'm not 100%, I think it was just after the beginning of COVID. So, it'd be 2020, wouldn't it, I suppose, I think. I'm not sure. It was autumn, and I got a Manica Rubita as my first queen.
Oh. Well, and how did that go, if we can just lead a little bit in towards today's podcast?
Yeah. Okay, so... Well, going back to why the Manica Rubita challenge started was because nearly everybody I have met or know, all the content creators and people, we've all tried at some point. And it says, I mean, I haven't looked at them, what the descriptions are on all the different ant sellers recently, but back then, back in 2020, it just listed them as a, you know, easy species or a beginner species. That was it. I didn't know that they were, you know, borderline impossible at the time. And obviously I think I probably did know that it wasn't you know, everyone recommends getting Lasius niger or Flavus as your first, and I should have done, and I'm not disputing that. Go for the sort of normal, you know, the local ants to you, basically, is definitely the first step you should do. So I don't dispute that. But I didn't want to do that because I thought, well, I'm only going to have one queen, one colony. You know, I talked my wife into letting me, well, me and my son really have one ant colony. And I thought, well, if I'm going to get one, I'll get the one I really want. And, you know, I won't worry about it then. So I got Manica Rubida because I thought giant fire ants, you know. I know because when I've seen the little red ants, normal little, you know, what they're called,
Yeah, remember Garuba?
Rubra. When I've seen Rubra, I've always thought these are like extra cool ants. You know, you don't often see them, and when you do, they're like, oh, right, they're extra cool. They're bigger and longer and more aggressive. So the prospect of getting a giant version of that was like, they'd be really super cool. So I got a queen that came with a worker or maybe two workers and two or three eggs. And the whole process lasted about 3 months, as in before the queen was completely dead, because I kept having the first worker would last 2 or 3 weeks and then die off. And by then another one would come out and she'd last 2 or 3 weeks and die off. And I mean, I really didn't, I was doing silly things. Like I was giving them Christmas cake and things like that. You know, I was sort of things you do as a beginner ant keeper, looking at them sort of 10 times a day and, you know, not things I wouldn't do now, basically, I was doing. So I was making all the usual mistakes. But
Yeah.
I don't know if that would have made any difference anyway. You know, they got delivered probably end of October or something anyway, when they should have been hibernating. And I was busy staring at them and moving them around, doing all sorts. But yeah, so that was my first experience of ant keeping was Manica Rubida. And it went wrong. And then I didn't dare do it again. And me and Jake, it's no secret that they were this hard. And obviously by then I knew Sid Kushi quite well. And he'd nearly made it that last this last winter. He'd nearly made it and then had a problem with them.
With
But
also with Manica.
with Manica Rubida, yeah. And so we'd had these sort of conversations, and I think me and Jake had both decided we were gonna sit it out and see how Sid managed to do his, basically. See if Sid can get it working, see if he can work out a setup that will work for Manica Rubida. And if he can, obviously then get on the bandwagon, you know, and get them. That was the plan. I think there was quite a few people who were sort of sitting back thinking, can Sid do it or not? Because he'd nearly done it once before. And then we basically egged each other on one night. Me and my Jake were messaging each other, going, go on then, if you do it, I'll do it, and blow this. And that was it. So we decided we would, and the challenge was born. And then started messaging lots of other people saying, anybody else up for this? You know? And yeah, that's all it was really, the start. It was just we decided we were actually going to give it a good go this year and try and get lots of other people involved. And then it wouldn't feel so bad if we were just on your own trying and not knowing what you did wrong. So
Yeah,
if we did
that
it
and
this
that,
way, there's lots of other people involved and everyone can, you know, put their own input in. Sorry, carry on.
and that's the thing, yeah, because I was invited to the group at first, and I
Yeah.
just knew that from just following along the lines of what the other people were talking about, that I couldn't join this challenge simply because at the time I did not have the time. It was when I wasn't the best antkeeper, didn't put too much time into the colonies, which I still feel today. Thank you, mates. So that's why I personally declined the experiment or the challenge. I keep saying experiment. I've done too many experiments. The challenge. But how many people ended up joining the challenge, as far as you know?
Oh, I'm a bit rusty on the exact details, if I'm honest. What I should have done is spent, I don't know, a full day researching, going back over everything, you know, from months ago, but I haven't. So I from well, yeah, Jake might have a better idea than me on some of these. You got any idea, Jake? I mean, I would think we were up to about eight or nine within the first 6 weeks, but that was eight or nine sort of. Well,
I
not all
think
of my
every
channels, but a lot of people.
social network
Sorry.
has a few.
Yeah, well, it sort of grew a little bit, didn't it? It was up to about eight or nine, and then like Big Ross got involved, and he's obviously like an Ant Lady cheer boy or cheerleader. So she got involved, and then it was all because I don't really do much with Facebook, so Big Ross kind of took over with the Facebook side. So they were doing that; they were advertising it on Facebook, because obviously. Yeah, so that got a few more people came in, and obviously then the Discord, Ants Anonymous Discord server was set up around that time as well, with a separate Manica Rubida channel on it. And I think after the Facebook thing, another sort of, I don't know, 10 people, 15 people came in from there. And I set up the Manica Rubida challenge What's I can't remember the one of the social media thing anyway. What's it called? Instagram
Yeah,
chat.
Instagram group. Yeah.
That was it. Yeah, that was quite a lot of people on it at one point. But obviously it kind of became a bit annoying, I suppose, really.
But that's also one of the things I thought was really, really cool because Ant Lady, she went out and said, "Let the challenge begin" or something. And she put a massive discount on her Manica Rubidas, which I found very cool that a store actually interacted with the community, like, directly.
Yeah, definitely.
It's not something I think I've seen before and still not seen since, for a store to go out and just say, "Community, here you go. Let the challenge begin."
I think it was the right time of year and everything as well. I mean, all the stores must have been getting nice, huge quantities of fresh queens coming in at the time. So it was a good thing in that way. I mean, we obviously, me and Jake started with Antantix queens anyway. So, and we knew the background about Antantix and, you know, Sam and how they look after the colony. So we knew we were getting a head start, you could say, a bit of a cheat code, just by getting Antantix ones. But so, I mean, from my point of view, I'm glad that it started. I'm glad that whatever happened happened and that lots of people tried to get into it. I mean, it's not, there's a lot more still going than I anticipated would still be going. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, that's my next kind of question, because I remembered back when I saw it that I think, what kind of setups did you use? Because I just know that Ryan, he went for a natural setup, naturalistic box, and I knew, and yeah. I know that there was also a Venus, and there was a Venus with dirt, and there was quite a few different yeah. methods. Can you remember what you saw?
Well, yeah, I mean, the first question, what I did, I had a Venus, and it was just a basic standard Venus setup. And then I, just based on all the stuff that was coming back in, I added a small outworld to the Venus. So they had a bigger hunting area, partly because I had dirt in the Venus outworld as well. When I say dirt, it was sort of clay-based reptile sand, you could say. And they used that as their nest pretty much straight away. So taking the top off, and they were like hiding under the food bowl. I had a food bowl in there, and they were using the food bowl as the top of their nest, which made obviously feeding and everything else a bit kind of tricky in there. So that's why I added an extra outworld straight away, because it was obvious pretty much within the first week that if you give them any kind of natural soil or, you know, whatever you give them, they're going to want to try and use it straight away, more so than lots of other ants would. I know a lot of ants, given the choice, they'd rather have a natural than sitting in a bare test tube with a piece of cotton. That's obvious. But these seem especially predisposed to using. I mean, there was lots of examples of people putting various different types of substrates in. Some that were like I was using, which are sort of more sandy clay-based type stuff. That seemed the most common anyway. But there was people putting things like cocoa fiber in, like fine, well, not that fine, but sort of, you know, chunks of sort of regular size, sort of like aquarium gravel type stuff. I remember seeing like a white stones, and even that they were trying their best to use it. It wasn't the right thing for them, but they were trying. And it just seems given any kind of opportunity at all, and they'll go for it. And I'm jumping ahead because you were asking about setups. But yeah, setups. There was all sorts. Somebody got into the challenge who'd already had them going for a while before and had a decent colony. I can't remember his name, Dion, something like that. But he had about a 30 worker colony anyway by then, and they were in a whitong nest. And wow. In the original guides, when you buy Manica rubida from, I don't know, 3 years ago, it would say, it would always recommend whitong as one of the best things to put them in. And over the last year and a half, whitong is sort of out of fashion at the moment, isn't it? But anyway, so he'd done well keeping them very, very wet. That was the big secret, or his main thing. He was saying, "I'm just keeping them extremely wet and in this whitong, and I've got 30 workers." So that was an immediate sort of success compared to most people. And then there was people like Lynn was keeping them in the bamboo tubes, and I've got extensive bad experience with bamboo tubes. I won't go down that rabbit hole, but yeah, I mean, I've still got probably six of them, so that's seven of them. But I would say don't ever use bamboo tubes for anything. I know it can work for some people for some things, but for your average ant keeper, just put it in the bin. Don't do it. It's just not worth it. You'll kill your queens. But it does work for some people. I mean, Big Ross was using it. Charlie's ants, he was using them. These are the people using the bamboo. And
the colonies are doing well?
I'm not so sure at the moment, because Big Ross has already lost his first manica the year before. His manica rubida the year before.
This year as well.
Okay. But that doesn't really say anything, because bamboo tubes tend to kill things anyway. You know, I did kind of warn him. I said, are you sure you really want to put it in there? Because, you know, it's like begging for failure. But, yeah. How about yours, Lynn? Are they still in the bamboo?
Still on bamboo and still doing great.
But you are, I would count you as a sort of, you know, next level ant keeper. You're a very good ant keeper. Let's put it that way. At the very least, I'd say you're a very good ant keeper. So,
yeah. So, to jump a little bit away from ramblings or Paul, Lynn, why did you join the experiment, and what have you observed and done?
Well, I went a different route. I put two queens together, two found.
Brave.
I don't think if anyone else tried that, but I might have been the only successful one with starting them out. And after the nanitics, those were actually very cool with the queens still. And then the normal sized workers came, and they actually started dragging one of the queens around, and I had footage of it because it was happening while I was home. So I actually took out that queen and put her in her own tube and gave her food, and she restarted as well. So then I had two separate colonies. And then I bought a third one to see if I could raise them on a different way. And the second queen moved to Stein, but sadly she has passed away at Stein. But my two are still doing great.
And how often are you then? How often are you feeding them then? Because I remember that's one of the reasons why I didn't want to do it. Because there was a lot of talk with feeding them every day or every other day. But yeah,
I honestly forget about them sometimes. So I haven't fed them that much, actually.
Lynn!
It's one of the colonies that was in the back of the desk. And like the one setup was a bit annoying to get into because I had the lid upside down, and there was a trail leading up and out of the enclosure, so I had to watch out every time I opened it, and I did not want to get stung by the manica. But I also gave them, like, I let them hunt little red runners and stuff, and they really enjoy hunting, so I let them do that as well, and I fed them crickets and stuff, but I did not feed them as often as, like, I do with my meat ants. My meat ants get, like, a lot of food. But the manica, actually, maybe two times a week only.
I thought one of your big secrets for your boost, you know, your amazing colonies, was that you feed them a lot more than most people. You know,
normally,
you
yeah.
Yeah.
In this case,
it's because you leave them alone. You don't disturb them that much.
I think that is a big secret with these.
Yeah. What about you, Jake? What's your story about the manicas?
Well, yeah, it started off rambling with ramblings about manica rubida. And basically, I got them and kept them in kind of shop conditions. So they were just in the tube that they came in, like raised them up from there. And eventually, once the first workers turned up, I put them into a satin with a little bit of substrate, and they did really well in there. And I still, every time I look into the satin there, I do expect the queen to be dead, just because that's the way they are. And I appreciate every day with, like, the queen, because at any moment she could die. However, at the moment, they're doing really well. I'd say at least 25 workers.
Oh, well done. I didn't know that.
Yeah, I need to make an update on them, really. But yeah, they're still growing. There's like three big larvae at the minute. Although I'm not sure whether to hibernate them, because I guess there's not enough information out there, really, on how it all works. And so at the minute, they're not actually hibernated. So hopefully I don't have any problems in that department.
I mean, back at the start, when we were, you know, really getting into it and lots of people were all getting involved, there was a lot of people finding out extra things about them. I can't think of the names of who was doing most of it and all that sort of thing. I think Pumpkin might have come up with a few bits of information about them. She's got a really, really good ant book. But and some of the theories about them, because they can come from quite hot countries, but at higher elevations. So another theory about Manuka rubida, a thing that might, I don't know if it was ever really proved, because a lot of the people who are still got them, and who still got them now, let's put it that way, are the people who are keeping them at sort of elevated temperatures anyway. They're not just at, say, UK room temperatures. I think I'm probably right in saying that. But one of the theories or things that people came up with was that because they were from higher elevations, even if they were in a warmer country, they'd be at higher elevations, sort of half of the mountainside, that sort of thing. Or like Switzerland, places like that, which are quite cold places. In my mind, they're quite cold places. But a lot of cold places can be very hot as well, can't they, at certain times of the year. But anyway, one of the theories that maybe it's to do with the elevation and therefore the temperature and the nest temperatures and things like that could be very different to what people think they should be or what people are thinking they should be keeping them at. Maybe the moisture levels are very different to what we think, because you think of them as sort of giant rubras, but maybe they're not giant rubras. Maybe they just share this, you know, a lot of similarities and a lot of looks and characteristics, but maybe they're not, you know, maybe they don't. If someone was out there in the wild sticking probes down their nests and things, checking actual humidity and actual temperatures, maybe it would be very, very different to rubra. There was a lot of that sort of thing floating around at the time. It was saying, you know, are they actually found very close to water sources and like under shady trees and all that sort of thing, like you would get with, say, rubra? But
finding them, they like to raid, was it Formica fusca, I think it was, too, and they just live in their homes. And it was like, it's all dry and everything in a Formica fusca kind of nest, but yeah, they'd happily live in there and things like that. And it was like, what are they up to?
Yeah, there's a lot that's not known about them.
That's really interesting compared to the wet white tongue block. So different.
Well, it just seems, because I was keeping it, my ones definitely seemed to like a lot of moisture, and a lot of other people found that as well. I mean, mine didn't succeed, so I can't honestly say that my, you know, I kept, I don't know how long I kept mine for, maybe 4 months or something like that. But in the end, it went. Well, for me personally, what I think killed them, what we came to the conclusion in the end, because I managed to get them through the first heat wave, when I did lose a lot of other queens. And then the second heat wave, I was more prepared and I thought I knew what I was doing then. So I did get them through the second heat wave as well, but it was in very damp, moist conditions, you could say, because I actually used a wet towel over the top of the ants that were on the floor in the downstairs toilets on a tiled floor. And that was the only way I could keep the temperature down. Because like in my living room where I'm standing now, it was 37 degrees for the days on end. You know, I just couldn't keep it down. That was literally the only place. And, even my garage was 37 degrees. It was, I live in one of the warmest parts of the UK anyway. So we tend to get very, very, I don't know why, but something to do with this flat round here. We tend to get very, very hot temperatures. Like I had ant flights, you know, Flabus and Niger and things like that, months before most people had ever seen one. And also I had them later than, you know, because the temperatures seem to stay up around here as well. I can't explain it, but that's the way it is. Anyway, it was a real nightmare. It was a real nightmare trying to keep them alive like that. So I was doing that. I managed to keep them alive. We got past the heat wave. But the temperature, and you don't really know unless you've got everyone's always going on at me because I used to be so mad about probes and I had temperature things all over the place. I had two cubes in an IKEA unit. And I think I had 8 different temperature probes going off in there and everyone was going, you don't need to do that. What are you doing? but realistically, the temperature difference, I think, is what killed them, or that's what we came to the conclusion on one of the sort of ant chats, you know, with Sid and everything, because it went from the floor in there and into the room in here, and it was in here at approximately 24, 25 degrees when I brought them in, and I don't 100% know exactly what they were on the floor. I thought it was only about sort of 22, something like that, But I think that it's not just the disturbance, because they weren't really disturbed that much other than moving them into the temperature. But 3 degrees, it could have been 3 degrees, is what I think, in a 24-hour period, was enough to disturb the queen. And she curled up and died.
Yeah, I was about to ask. So the queen just died and the workers lived on?
Yeah, they lived on for ages.
Yeah.
But I had the same problem with lots of other queens. I've still got a colony of Camponotus maculatus still alive, a colony of Camponotus irritans that's still alive, and the queens died, you know, about a week or two after that last heat wave. That's very annoying. Just the queens died. No one else died. I mean, they slowly are dying off now, I suppose. The workers just in lifespan, but yeah. So, had a bit of a bad year for ant keeping.
It's going to be interesting to see if how many people that'll get affected by this as temperatures rises. How? Of course, it's quite interesting to sit here and have three different people's tests. Casey, have you done the Manica Rabbit experiment?
I have not, but...
No.
Oh, hi, Casey. I didn't know you were here.
Oh, yeah, I was a little late. My bad.
No worries. Yeah, there's not... Have you followed it, Casey?
Yeah, I heard about it when you guys were first started. I definitely heard about it, but I don't know anybody participating. I don't even know anybody with Manica Rubida except for you guys.
I don't think you'd really get them in America, because they're sensitive anyway. Sensitive to shipping and things like that anyway. You know.
Yeah, with all our rules and things, I'm not even sure if they're native to my country.
No, well, they're not, but...
that doesn't seem plenty of people, huh?
No, there's plenty of people in America who just get what they want. But these are a particular ant where it wouldn't... it's difficult, it's bad. One of the other theories about why they're so difficult was the shipping, even just shipping them from Europe, because they're not natural in the UK, but shipping them from Europe to here, even that could be just too much disturbance. And, you know, that was another theory about them. So there's no chance of getting across to America in one piece.
We do have our own finicky ants, so maybe we should try it with honeypots next summer.
Oh, the big honeypot challenge.
You could. I wouldn't be on that. Not in this country.
No, it'd be, shipping it would be a nightmare, just like the Manica.
What you've just said, the honeypots, that was something like, I think Sid said that once. He was going there, like our version of the honeypots, where every year, literally tens of thousands of queens are sold.
And you can literally look at them wrong and they'll die.
Yeah. Well, that's how it seems with these Manica Rubida. And tens of thousands are sold. All the ant shops sell loads and loads and loads. Everybody wants them. I mean, if they didn't die all the time, they'd probably be the most popular ants out there, I'd guess, because they're like Camponotus size. I mean, that's something that hasn't been mentioned. One of the other reasons for the challenge, and one thing that's so good about Manica Rubida, even if you just get a queen, that queen, it's like having your own sort of little aggressive, you know, do it all pet ant. You know, even if you've got no workers, it's a really fun ant to keep, because it comes out, it does everything. It does the hunting, it does the building itself, it does everything for itself. It doesn't, if there is a worker, it's almost like it's reluctant to sort of let the workers take over, and it will go out hunting as well on its own sometimes, even when it's got workers. They're such a cool ant to keep as an ant on its own. So they're in a sort of, not a league of their own, but they're, you know, they've got things going for them that aren't just in that way. But they're like our version of the honeypots. Most people don't succeed.
Yeah, it's quite interesting hearing how it's, of course, the thing is also that it's quite a fast growing species, or not fast, but I mean, it's an active European ant, and that's something we don't see too much of in the bigger size, if we look at Camponotus. But how have the other, I don't know how much you've followed. I know you followed out in the beginning, but how many colonies do you think have survived? And is there a pattern in who have survived, or is it just pure randomness?
Well, this whole challenge, I have to say, I mean, I know we talked about this, but realistically, the guy who's done the most for this challenge and who is still doing it is Sid at Wakushi. He had 18 queens going at one point. And it was part of the challenge. He was bringing them up and going, and he's conducted far more experiments with them than I could ever. I mean, I've missed a lot of the ant charts, so I'm hoping Lynn and Jake will know more about this than I would. But he's done all sorts with them. I mean, I know Lynn started off with the two queen. I think, were you there that night? One night, Sid was doing speed dating basically with Manica Rubida queens as part of the experiment to try and work out if it was, you know, he came down to the point where he had like alphas and betas, he could say, or aggressives and non-aggressives, and he was like putting the non-aggressive ones together until he got a four queen. Well, I think he hit upon a four queen pretty easily, pretty quick actually. But then he was doing the speed dating whilst we were all watching, putting them together, and they fight. Okay, that one's coming out. This one going in with that one. This one going with that one. You know, two aggressive ones together, two non-aggressive ones together. Trying to work out, was it that all the queens he'd got had all come from the same massive colony, or maybe it was like two or three colonies, and if they got the pheromones from that colony, would they then cohabit? Would they then become a sort of multi-queen? Would that work? But I don't know if he's still got. Does anybody else know? Has Sid still got any multi-queen colonies going?
I don't think so.
So you still have that,
you? I know I'm thinking of the Tetramorium. No, I think, yeah, I haven't seen one for a few weeks.
I mean, the last I saw of Sid's experiments, I mean, I've last week I was still under COVID, really. I couldn't really pay attention to what was going on. And the week before that, I had a family party, and I missed that. But before that, so 3 weeks ago, at one of his ant chats, he was doing one of Sid's latest experiments, which is based on some of this we've already talked about, was he's using the natural, still a test tube, but giving them access to the desert stone, you know, this sort of clay-based substrate, putting it in the tubes in varying degrees to see what they did with it and how that affected the egg development. And he, because at one point a lot of his had eaten all their eggs and they were all down to nothing, and then they've all come back again. That happened about 4 or 5 weeks ago. Suddenly they've all got clutches of eggs and they're doing well again. And he couldn't believe that, because it's unheard of really with those. They don't tend to come back from the dead, but they did.
But that's also something worth mentioning. Of course, where our normal Lacius Nitro Queen is fully clustral, they are, the Manica Rubida are semi-clustral. So even if they eat the eggs, they can just hunt for new protein and re-found, where a normal Lacius Nitro Queen may not go out and hunt because, well, once she's done, she's done. That's, I guess, the good thing. I mean, they may be more fragile, but they also can survive losing all of their brood.
Yeah, they're more fragile they appear more fragile to ant keepers and how we keep them. Yet it also seems like they've got that potential to come back, it seems. That's another thing Sid found out. They've got this potential to come back from the dead. They can do it under the right circumstances. I mean, one of those circumstances that he come up with, I think I'm saying the right thing here, was to do with this extra substrate, putting the substrate in, and they then coat the inside of the test tube around, not just at their cotton end, but, you know, a good sort of centimetre down from there as a sort of natural founding chamber. And they properly coat it all up, and they look really good. And then they look like they were happy and they were getting on with it. I mean, other theories that were happening right from the start of the challenge were that Manica Rubida, maybe, I know you often hear this with Lazius Niger in the wild, don't you? It's like 1 in 10,000 maybe gets to actually make a colony. So collecting queens from the wild is literally never going to make any difference at all. Yeah. And it might be that's Lazius Niger. It might be with Manica Rubida. It might be they've got real bad sort of fertility issues or survival issues anyway. And it's nothing to do with there's no space for them, like it would be with Lazius Niger. It's the fact that maybe just so many of them are not very good at breeding and forming into colonies anyway. And it might not be down to the keepers. It might be that. That was a theory from a long, long time ago. And
there's a lot more into this than I actually thought.
The fact that so many people are still going and still being successful, I think, has blown that theory away. You know, it seems like this year getting so many sort of, you could say, high profile ant keepers involved, or people who, I don't know, because there's loads of, my ant keeping knowledge is generally down to ant creators and people like that. But that doesn't mean we're the best keepers out there. It just means we're the ones that like to talk about it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So there might be...
I definitely agree on that.
Yeah, there's people out there who are very good at ant keeping who, you know, they don't need to talk about it, don't feel the need to talk about it. They're not, I don't know, not the word is for people like us who do. But, you know, and there's plenty of people like that out there. So it might be that the actual success rate is far better. And this year, getting those sort of people, the sort of people I was just talking about, who are ant keepers, who are sort of content creators and like to talk about it and you know, all that sort of stuff, involved, and having them all sort of pay attention and do a bit of swapping ideas around, I don't know whether that's genuinely helped or not, because nearly everybody who's gotten this challenge has tried before with these. That was one of the issues. So, yeah, sorry, I keep talking too much here.
You are the guest of honor, so that's just as it should be. Lynn or Jake, have you noticed anything with this old Sid thing as you've followed along as well?
I know the chew pods, they seem to be like a massive factor, just having a little bit of like a mini outworld for them. That seems to be like super beneficial, that does. I think hygiene turned out to be kind of every time a queen would die in one of Sid's setups, it always ended up looking like it was hygiene based. So like the queen would drag something into the tube that was too big and it would go a bit minging. And then eventually she'd die. And I think only a couple like had it happen, but they always seem to have like really dirty tubes. Whereas the other girls, they like actually maintain their tube very nicely. So I'm not sure how big a factor that is. I don't know if it's like genetic, as if their queens are like, I don't know, naturally messy. I guess if they were polygamous and you could have a messy queen and she could pair up with like a few tidy queens and they could clean up after her, but you could have all sorts of things like that. But hygiene does seem to be, though, quite a big factor from what I saw.
Fascinating as well. So it seems a test tube with not too much space and also with a little bit of dirt gives a high humidity. Not dirt, but what's it called? Clay, sand.
Substrate, yeah.
Yeah, substrate. Seems to be an ideal start with probably also a mini outworld. Not a mini outworld, what is it called? Tube pod?
Test tube pods.
Test tube pod, yes, exactly.
That is one of the successful ways of getting them going. I mean, we've never narrowed that. That's how Sid did it. Sid did it, if you see what I mean. But a lot of the other successful ones, there's so many different ones that we can't sort of say that you do just do this and it will work. But like Jake had a test tube pod originally, didn't you, as well?
Yeah, that's what I started with. I'm kind of biased in that opinion, but yeah.
But did they move the sand in when you said you put them a test tube in an outworld with sand, right, Jake?
Yeah, I put them into the test Saturn with the substrate. However, none of them like moved a grain of it into the tubes. So, yeah, that was a bit weird. And they do move it.
What was the substrate?
It's the kind of clay, sandy, red wakushi stuff.
Yeah.
With the
desert sand stuff.
Gravel mix.
Yeah.
But they haven't really.
I'm surprised they didn't move that because that's one of the ones that they like.
Yeah, they definitely like move it around the outworld because they constantly bury their food, but yeah, they never take it back into the nest for some reason. They don't even like block off inside the end of the tubes like some ants do that. Yeah.
I mean, one person we haven't mentioned so far, which we should mention, is obviously Campo Nico. Because right from the start of the challenge, Campo Nico was our star player. You know, he was the ace in the pack, so to speak, right from the start, because from what we could tell right at the very start, Campo Nico had, well, he still has, he's got two colonies, but he was the only person who had a successful big colony of Manica Rubida, and he'd mentioned them in one of his like larger updates. He's done more about them since as well, but and he kept them relatively dry, actually, still does, keeps them, compared to most people, he was keeping them quite dry, and basically tubs and tubes, but quite dry really compared to a lot of people. But the point is, he was the one who actually got it, and I think he'd had quite a few offers for that colony. People want them because you know, it's a bit of excited right now if you've got a big Manica Rubida colony. I mean, yeah, it's a bit of a sort of, not an ego trip, I don't know what you call it. It's like a...
It's a showpiece.
It's a showpiece, but it's a sort of very desirable sort of thing. It's a bit like having a, you know, sports car or something that nobody else can get. So there's a high value to having them. But then the Ant Lady used to have a big colony as well. So she was the other person who'd had a big colony. I don't know if she'd raised it or bought it like that. I really don't know. But she had a big colony, like 200 worker colony of Manica Rubida. So she was the other person who had them. Hers had died though. I can't remember. She did say, but I can't remember how they died. But hers had died out. And I mean, I don't know with Manica Rubida what the like the length of the queen's life is, for instance. You know, like with Rubra. The queens don't live that long anyway.
No.
You know, it's not a 15-year-old queen or anything like with Lazarus and Ige or anything. I think Jake could probably know. Jake's a man for Rubra, but you've only got a set length of time. So even if you buy, say, a six-queen colony of Regenobis or Rubra, you've only got a set amount of time before it's going to die out anyway, and it's nothing you've done. It's just no new queens. But
yeah, they only tend to live 2 to 5 years or something if it's a long-living queen.
Yeah. So
what about temperature? Is it heated or just room temperature?
Well, everyone from the experiment, people were all doing different things. That's another that was another factor in it. Some people were keeping them 100% heated, if you see what I mean, as in at sort of 24-ish or whatever it was, 100% heated. I never did. I was keeping them at room temperature or whatever the temperature was, you know, because it was over the summer. So in my case, the problem was the temperatures were wrong anyway.
Yeah,
but say Sid, for instance, you know, he keeps his ants all at the same temperature all year round, or he was doing. I think he's been changing that recently. But so he'd be trying to keep them at sort of 25, 24, 25, 26, around that, depending on what was going on, all year round. And that's one of his big secrets and how he keeps his ants. Well, you've got the same sort of thing, haven't you? Because you have an ant
where
you try and keep. So it's obvious to... Not just with ants, with all sorts of inverts. You know, if you can keep a room at a steady temperature all year round, then you're laughing, you know. But obviously, 80-90% of people out there just can't do that. So, well, not in the UK anyway. Maybe in other countries, but I suppose even in Europe now, with all the prices and everything, you're going to be affected as well.
It's not cheap anymore. What I don't do for my udder. That's crazy.
You're still paying to keep the entire room at a stable temperature, aren't you? You've not gone out to incubate or anything.
No, I'm really considering doing something with the adder just because it got very cold a few days ago and the room was down to 19 degrees and the fungi just lost half of their size in two or 3 days. So now I've turned the heat up even more and it's just expensive.
Well, I mean, that's a big reason why I don't want leaf cutters, to be honest. You know, I want leaf cutters, obviously, in the back of my mind. They're like the kind of, like, whoa, they're the species. Well, they're not really. I mean, for me, it's never, I like seeing other people's leaf cutters, and then I think to myself, because I've got some stick insects, and I know that can be a bit of a pain in the arse sometimes. I'm thinking, I've got to go and get some more leaves then. So I wouldn't say they're my dream species, but they are one of the ones I would like to try one day, but I don't... For me, it's more this heating issue. I mean, I've built a massive incubator in the garage. It's about 1.5 meters tall by 50 centimeters deep by 1.4 wide. And it's made out of plywood and then lined with special insulated foil, you know, that bubble wrap stuff. And then I have a 100-watt heat mat across the back, and it's got a shelf in the middle. It's all for my tarantulas and other inverts. I've got the big roach colony in there and stuff like that. But obviously, roaches as well, they need, you know, if you've got a roach colony, they need the high temperatures. I've got two roach colonies now, trying to. I'm not doing very well with the red runners. But so that's if I was to get leaf cutters, they'd go in there. Or I'd do the same sort of thing, or have buy a piece of furniture from IKEA or something with a glass front and insulate it. And that would be how I'd keep the ants. I wouldn't mess about trying to. You know, because that's been a success for me, having a glass front for my... I've got... My ants live in an IKEA unit anyway, and I bought a glass front for one of the shelving cubes, and that's made a big difference. I've now got a really stable area just in that one bit behind the glass front, and that's they've been doing really well in there. So I think it is. I think that is the future in ant keeping, whatever anyone says. I mean, is it like, I'm involved in tarantulas and people are always going, oh, you need an oil filled radiator. And then somebody else is chirping, hang on, that's £4 a day, or that's, you know, that's yeah. going to be £4 a day extra on my electricity bill. That's a lot per week. That's a lot per month, you know, under current prices. So the future in ant keeping, because they're even more precise, tarantulas can cope with going cold anyway. But it's obvious the future in ant keeping is going to be furniture with either insulation inside it and glass fronts, things like that. I mean, I know, Jake, you've gone down the incubator rate as well, route as well, haven't you?
Yeah, I've got my little tool cabinet that I converted into an incubator, and I found it does save a lot of energy because, yeah, you can keep the rest of the house whatever temperature you want, and you know that, like, inside the incubator, it'll all be nice and warm. And mine's just, like, bubble wrap in the thin areas and, like, wood around the edges, and it does the job pretty good.
About to test it properly now. It's going to be, is it -4?
Yeah, next few days. Tonight.
Yeah, so you're going to be testing it properly. I've got contingencies set up for if it gets too cold for in there. I've got, like, an extra heater on the floor and all that. So I can... I don't think I need it. Everything's all right.
That's good to have a backup. But yeah, we have talked a lot about the man cover builder right now. Now there's a lot more to say than I actually expected, which is good. And maybe something to in a year's time or something to go back to this episode and maybe do a part two to see how it has unfolded, if it's still the same or.
Well, it's just not finished. It's not finished.
No,
by
exactly.
Any means.
It's no. That's the thing. It's not at all finished. So it'll be interesting to go back and maybe redo this episode around next year at the same time. But yeah, I want to go. I mean, Casey, we haven't talked too much with you. I'm sorry.
That's just, all right. That's fine. I'm enjoying listening.
Yeah, that's. I always feel bad. But yeah, before if any of you guys have any ant news, that's not to think about it. But Jake. Have you any final thoughts about what you've learned keeping Manica Rubido over this past few, half year, 1 year?
Well, keeping them, it's just been like keeping Myrma Carubra for me. However, I have, like, because a lot of people's have died, that I've really have bonded a lot more with the queen, because every time I look in, it is kind of, is she going to be dead? And it really does make you appreciate it. Like, some of my other ants, I look in and it's like, they're going to be fine, like, if you get what I mean.
Yeah,
and it's easy to start taking it for granted. However, the Manica Rubida Queen, I never take her for granted. Like, she's too, I don't know, she could just drop dead.
Yeah, I have the same with my Nova Mesa Cacarelli Queen. After she had such a poor, she was down to being alone, and just looked at her, and I was like, yeah, it's game over. And she's just made such a brilliant recovery, and yet I still feel scared because she was all alone, and I'm just like, it can go bad again. But it gives you a different relationship when you know death may be around the corner.
Yeah, you care a lot more or something. Yeah, yeah. It's kind of, each moment is more precious.
Yeah, exactly. What about you, Lynn? Have you any thoughts of this whole Manica Rubida? Is it anything you want to retry next year, or what's your thoughts on it?
Well, I was kind of surprised that mine held on for so long, even though I've kind of neglected them. Like, with the heat wave, I was like, oh, they're going to die for sure now, and they're still alive, and they're still kicking. So,
this is the pro incubator right here.
I think I recommend everyone not be afraid to try new things with this species, because we don't know everything yet about them. So, if you're like, I want to try this out, should I try this out? Just do it. Just try something. Just be different than the others and try something new. Don't be afraid. Well, maybe be a little bit afraid, but. Don't be afraid to try, I guess.
Lovely words. I think next year, once I've heard a little bit more, I mean, now it seems twice feedings. That's within what I'm starting to do with most of my colonies now. So I'll definitely jump on the boat and also try next year. But yeah, Ramblings, do you have any final things you want to say regarding the Manica Rubida Challenge?
Well, as I say, there's been so much, and I haven't, you know, I'm being honest, I haven't gone back and looked through everything, and I should have done.
No, but, that's all right.
You know what I mean? I'm just going off the top of my head on what I remember from. But so I've not said 80% of what we did know. You see what I mean? And what we found out, and the various setups. Going back to the start, the setups. I mean, there was people keeping them in like Saturn setups. There was people keeping them in, you know, high tech ant setups. There's so many different setups out there, and I don't know how many of those are still going. If I'm honest. I suspect not that many, but then there's other. I think Sadie's still got hers, hasn't she? Aunt England.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, I think hers are doing well. She did an update, didn't she, recently? Where she's one of the last of the updates. She did a really good video. So if you're looking for the most concurrent video about the Manic Rubida challenge, then I think it's Aunt England that you need to go to. I think she's from the top of my head, she's the one that I know of that's come up with the last of the good ones. So that if anyone out there doesn't know anything about this and wants to sort of find out about it or find out where we're up to, then I think her video is probably the place to go at the moment. But as I say, Sid came up with he's still doing it now, and he's come up with so many different things. That's. I feel guilty that I haven't spoken to Sid even and asked him. You know what? Because back, but I used to update the, you know, the Instagram thing and the Discord with information. But a lot of my information was just basically what Sid thought. You know, like sugar water. You know, do they like sugar water or not? Is sugar water a good thing to give them or not? You know, some people were not giving them any sugar either. Well, some people didn't give them any, and treating them more like Harper Vanessa. The Venator, you know, they're very similar in some ways in how they it's almost like Manica Rubida is almost like a budget version of them in some of the ways they act and things, but and you wouldn't dream of giving them sugar water, or not that I know of. Maybe you should, but you see what I mean. It was like, do they need it or not? But yes, they like it, but do they need it? You know, and some people were giving it to them. Some people, I don't know if PJ's are still alive. Actually, our PJ's had a bit of a bad time recently, hasn't he, with all the things going off. But anyway, PJ's he was only ever feeding on waxworms. That was part of the experiment, and his were doing really well just on waxworms. I can't remember if he was given sugar water, but there was, I think Pumpkin was giving them sugar water like any other ants, whenever they want, as much as they want. And some people were, some people weren't. You know, I'd give them a drop once every 2 weeks, see if they liked it or not, and they weren't. They liked it, but I wouldn't say they were. Wasn't like ant food for them. You know, most ants, they say the workers need the sugar water, they don't need protein. I'm not sure with these. But anyway, yeah, so you asked me the question. anyway, there's loads more we could have added and should have added. It's not finished, you know. Sid is still going strong with his, and they're actually picking up and getting on, doing better. So it's not over yet. I mean, I may get back into it again when the fresh greens come out.
Yeah.
That's my sort of plan. And just you challenge yourself, don't you? Go for it again. And hopefully by next summer, I'll have an air conditioner and everything as well. So, you know, I should be more equipped to deal with the temperature drops, the temperature rises as well as the temperature drops. So I think that's my thing.
My big secret was to keeping the room cool was simply just to block out any sunlight from entering. I have a completely black curtain, and my ant room only has one small window. It's a door, so it's a, I mean, it's 2 meters tall, but I just took that in front, and even though it was 35 degrees outside, 30 degrees inside in my whole apartment, the ant room was still 24, just because there was no sunlight at all coming in. So that really blocked out a lot of heat.
Well, I had 54 degrees in my garden, and I must live in a sunspot. I mean, I don't know, because it came on the news. Oh, you know, the new record has been broken at Heathrow, and it's 40. I was like, 40? What are you on about? And it wasn't just me. You know, I've got a friend who lives in Colchester, and because I was taking pictures, putting it on Instagram. Look at my thermometer, 54 degrees, and it was, you know, it wasn't. You know, I was hanging it from things, so it wasn't touching anything and things like that. And he went back after work and he did his and he got 54 as well. It's like, well, either we're all wrong, or
Yeah,
I don't know. I don't know how they registered how they registered these top temperatures, but I was getting 54 in the garden for like one day, but there was no.
I think it's due to the
there was no way of making my
shadows, and maybe not shadows, but it has to be in well ventilated areas, because my garden also went to 45 at one year, even though the weather forecast only said 28. But that's just due to my heating zone being quite limited on wind, so the heat But yeah, guys, it is time to end it up. You are good. You are good guest to have on Ramblings, because you talk.
Hang on, that's a problem for me.
but it's good for a podcast. okay, but guys, do you have any ant news? Jake, do you have any ant news?
For ANN, if anyone has any nominations for their video of the year, make sure jump that in the comments. Because at the moment, I think it's just your video, Holofer, that's been nominated, but there's more videos that are good out there. I'm going to have a trawl myself and find some more. But yeah, if anyone's got any nominations, that'd be great.
For me personally, obviously, Holofer is, you know, you've come out with some amazing stuff. And it's obvious, but you put real effort into it, doing really good, camera skills and like that one with your the first sort of documentary you did that was up close with the Nikkos. You know, we had them coming out in that outworld against the sand background. That was like your breakthrough, wasn't it, on the really high quality? So that was really good.
That was also a good one.
That was good. I need to look at that again. But Campo Nikko, I think, is your biggest competition off the top of my head. So he does some amazing stuff, doesn't he? Which is same quality. It's just who's got the best, I suppose. And then you've got, say, someone like Antscapes, and he's got some really good up close video, like with the trap jaws walking around on those lily pad type things and all that sort of stuff. You know, there's some really good videos out there.
Yeah, there really is. It's been a good year for ant keeping. Not for me personally, but generally for the hobby, it's been a good year, I feel like. But Ramblings, do you have any ant news this week, or anything specific you want to give a shout out to?
Not really. I did an update the other day. I'm not going to walk through it because I'll be talking for another 20 minutes. I'll do another update sometime in the next few days.
What about you, Lynn?
I've done some DIY for the first time ever. Or it's not really DIY, but it's something else. Like, you probably know that some ants do not like the mesh parts of the EA aesthetic mesh nests.
Yeah.
I have then added a layer of, what's it called? Plaster mix, like a really cheap plaster mix. And then I've added sand on top of that to make it integrated a little bit like a tahil. A kind of texture, and it holds out really well. And right now the meat ants are moving into that nest, and they seem to really like it.
You're gonna have to send some pictures on that.
Good idea.
That must be some people.
What brand of plaster did he use? Plaster. Was it from like a hobby shop or something? Well, was it from a hobby shop, or was it?
I bought this from Antheap. Where is it?
Oh, so it was one that Antheap sells, so it's one that's recommended for doing this thing.
Yeah, it doesn't have a name. It's like the gypsum.
Gypsum. I'm always interested because I made some ant nests a while ago in Ferrero Rocher. I was copying what Jake did, actually, his Tetramorium. So I did that, and I used just like from a hobby shop, Plaster of Paris, basically. And it didn't really work out that well. Well, it did. I still got them, but they got these, even as they were drying out, it took weeks of drying out. They ended up with these horrible sort of mold spots on. Oh. And it was obvious if I then keep them in a sort of damp environment, it's just going to be mold blooms all over the place. I think, Jake, you said, English ivy? You put ivy into it. Ivy. It will stop the mold.
I really like, I use UltraCal 30 for my plaster.
Is that the dental stuff? I've heard that the dental
is really hard.
I just heard rumor that that's what Tar Heel Ants uses, and whatever I have further been told that he does his own mix of gypsum and stuff now, but before that I was told that he used UltraCal 30, and I assumed if it was good enough for his nest, it was probably good enough for mine. So
no, you've just given me some brilliant information. That's what I was struggling with. That's why I'm asking. I need to find the brand that works, that doesn't go moldy. So I would like to experiment more with gypsum and plaster and things like that, but I've been put off by my first ones going a bit moldy and responding well to moisture.
They're not fun to make. Well, they are fun to make, but they're hard to get right.
Yeah, so UltraCal 30. I'll look for that.
Yeah, I built like 5 or 6, and I don't even use them.
testing is perfect.
Yeah.
What about you, Casey? Do you have any ant news?
I had my first Myrmecocystis death, so now I am down to 6 workers.
No.
Unfortunately. But that's it. That's all I've got. None of my other founding colonies, all of them are fine. I haven't had any deaths. I gave my Pogonomermex Barbatus a bigger foraging area. And shortly after doing that, I was watching, you give him a new foraging area and you're going to watch him for a little while to, just watch him. But I kind of noticed what it looks like when harvester ants start dying. And I had a panic attack thinking that like something I did was causing them to die, because I noticed 2 workers just like acting super lethargic and like having a hard time. They're just being really clumsy, like even more so than usual. And they just kind of stopped moving, like they were like, how they take little ant naps when you watch them, they just stop moving for like 2 minutes and then carry on. But they were like being super sluggish and lethargic and acting weird. And I thought maybe because it was cold, but no, because none of the other workers were acting weird. And
Did they die then, or what happened?
Yeah, I watched 2 harvester ants like slowly die, and it was super weird. And because it's weird because they're my most numerous colony, and so I'm you get super used to watching them, and like you know how your workers are gonna act and things like that. But like now that my colony is big enough that I can actively see ants dying instead of just like checking on them and seeing dead ants, it was a super weird experience.
Yeah, I get that. Especially just seeing them act weird. It's always
and you
just know that what's happening when they start acting like that.
And like I knew it wasn't the dirt that I put in, because I've been using that dirt I made like 10 pounds of dirt. And I've been using it for everything, and none of my other colonies are affected. The last outworld I used also had that dirt in it, and like I didn't add anything new, so I had like a solid day of thinking about why my ants are dying. And I think it was just natural causes. It was only 2 workers, so like it's not like I was having a serious die off. It was just I saw 2 workers die slowly of natural causes, and I need to double check all my everything just to make sure it was natural causes instead of an actual issue.
Yeah, I mean, I'm still a lot on mite alert at home. Nico's also still have mites, but they seem to be coping with them. But yeah, I have a strict eye on all my ants at the moment just due to the mites. But with my ant news, I want to give a little shout out to Ant Bay. A guy on YouTube who have made a Campanotus maculatus update, which was a very cool little update. They have grown exponentially fast. And also just today, this morning, Kursgazet, don't know if you know them, Kursgazet, I don't know how you pronounce them, but they also made a video of the horror of the slaver ant. And that was a very, very good video, I must say. And it's been seen 2 million times at the time of recording. So yeah, people have liked it as well. The only thing we need to do, we still need to hear about the Mesocephalotus experiment, Lynn.
Oh God. wait, let me lift up this heat, man. because they are now they're already sharing the heat mat of the meat ants, but the meat ants now have the heat mat on top, so they have been switched around. I don't think much has been happening. There's a lot of Cephalodes workers and a lot of Mesa workers still roaming around, but I cannot fully see if the brood is doing well, so it's a bit of an icky moment.
Yeah.
But other than that, they are doing rather fine.
They're not doing bad, at least.
No, not bad and not better. I expect them to be slow growers, so I won't. I might not see developments for a bit, possibly.
Yeah.
Oops, oh. Almost disconnected the meat ends. Fuck.
I mean, it would make sense that they don't grow too fast, as the species generally is quite big. But I want to say thank you all for listening in. And Paul, where can people find you if they want to find you?
Well, Ant Ramblings, that's it. And Ant Ramblings on Instagram or, I don't put much on Instagram at the moment, but I do. Instagram or YouTube, Ant Ramblings.
Wonderful. And with that, I want to say thank you very much for joining in. Definitely heard a lot more about the Manicat than I thought. I was a little bit scared if we could take out an entire episode, but you took the stage by storm, and it's been a very enjoyable session. But yeah, I want to say thank you all for listening in. Be sure to share this with all of your friends and family, and you will hear more from us at the AntPod next week.
Bye.